Hey there, this is Justin with the Huffines Institute. Now remember, there'll be a question at the end of the podcast that, if answered correctly, could result in someone receiving one of the great-looking Huffines t-shirts. The catch? You need to be the first one to send your answer to huffinespodcast@hokn.tamu.edu.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast. Brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance. All in language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Medicine Podcast from the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M University. We thank you so much for downloading us today and listening, taking the time to listen to the things that are going on in the world of sports medicine. And today, as we always promise, we have brought another fun guest today. We have Dr. Greg Bennett with us today, who's already laughing, which is a good thing. Dr. Bennett comes to us from our Division of Sports Management. He has his specialty is sports marketing. So welcome, Greg. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks. Yeah, you're promising fun. That's perfect. That's great.
So, yeah, we're just starting off like that. So we're going to start off with a simple question. How did you get into sports marketing?
Well, I got into sport marketing because I think it was right down the fairway, so to speak, it's a sweet spot with me. I identify a lot with things like advertising. I enjoy commercials, entertainment, and sport clearly is an entertainment field, and as far as the business side is concerned, and marketing is very, very important and vital to the field, and it just fits very well with, I guess how I've been raised in the academy, so.
Yeah. We hear so much about marketing being associated with kind of business world, mm-hmm. corporations, and I won't name any big corporations. That would be a form of marketing, I guess. Right? So how does that differ from what you do in the world of sports?
Well, I think there are some unique things about sport that is different than the typical marketing that is out there. In fact, when I do my basic lecture on sport marketing, I talk about 12 of those things, how the discipline is different. And, for instance, one of those things is that our product is actually perishable, in that if you're going to go watch Texas A&M play football on a Saturday, you buy the ticket, of course, and the ticket is something that's a concrete thing, but the product itself actually perishes after the event's over. Mm. So you're selling a product that invariably is going to be over with in 4 hours if it's a TV game, 3 hours if it's not, those types of things. And so there are numerous ways that it's a unique thing. In fact, what kind of brand is out there that people paint their face over while they consume it, jump and cheer and act like a fool, over certain things. And really, you can look at it sociologically if you wish, but what other brand do people so identify with, that it's a part of their life so much, important that particular brand is. And if you just, again, if you take an A&M football, basketball, soccer, whatever, those things are different in people's lives. They have very deep, sincere meanings to people that other things like, let's say, Tide, detergent doesn't, nor can probably ever have.
Right. I have never painted my face when I use Tide detergent.
No, I don't think so. That's right. But you probably have when you've cheered for A&M, right?
So. what happens in my home stays in my home.
That's right.
Yeah. It's always been fascinating to me how people will buy merchandise from universities or from teams that, A, they've never attended, or B, they've never gone to see play, but for some reason or other, they have been drawn to be associated with that, or feel like they want to be associated with that entity.
Right, that's correct, and that's what I'm saying. I think there's an identification which comes through the social identity literature that talks about how we, as human beings, we identify with certain things and certain facets of life, and it just so happens, if you take college football as an example, people in the state of Texas are going to identify with the state of Texas, and therefore it's going to be one of the teams that's here that they root for or feel like is like them, and they identify with that team. And so whether it would be due to the behavior of the coach, the colors, the things that are all involved with marketing you know, types of constructs, but they're going to eventually identify with the one or the other. Sure. You know, in most states it's one or the other. In this state there are more options, obviously. But, you know, when I was at Auburn, it was Auburn or Alabama. That's who you cheered for.
Right.
And to be honest, most of those people in the stadium on Saturday didn't attend the university that they're cheering for, but they identify every bit as much with that particular university as the people who went there.
Right.
So it's an unusual thing.
Yeah,
it really is.
You make a great point earlier about there's kind of a shelf life on these things, perishable. Do you find that, are there differences between the sports in the marketing? Like, would you market football different than you'd market, say, basketball?
Absolutely. And the consumer is different. You know, there's a lot of, it depends on, and again, that's where good quality research comes in, is you have to, you know, have the scholarship side of it, or the research side of it, helps the teams or the leagues, or, you know, even the individual athletes who are, you know, trying to sell their products, so to speak. It helps them to identify that. But when you think about this, the marketing segment that cheers for A&M football is really different in some respects than the one that cheers for the University of Texas. And, you know, there are different brand attributes for A&M as compared to Texas, and A&M is a conservative, traditional place, and we value those types of things. And whereas Texas is a little bit different than that. You still have some of the same types of people,
right?
But the attributes that they value and the lifestyles that they lead, you know, sort of steer them towards that one area. And then you can go across that a little further. You can look at, well, what about being a soccer fan, for instance, in the state of Texas? Well, you may have more of a, the demographic may change, and the demographic may change to, you know, where you don't have as many, let's say, African-American people who enjoy soccer, which I don't know that to be the case or not. But the point being is it certainly has a Latin flavor, and the demographic is definitely Latin. And so the Houston Dynamo, or Dynamo, which is really how it should be pronounced, that particular, if you go to one of their games, you'll notice immediately that the crowd, the target market, is very different than what's at an A&M football game. And so, absolutely, there's different ways to speak to and communicate with and interact with the different teams.
I think probably it's I know it's a naive question. I don't have to think about it. It's a naive question. But the naive question I have, so I would assume it's so with professional teams that they have marketing experts. But is that the case for colleges now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And A&M has a group of folks who do marketing here. And Jeff Small is the guy that's over that. And, you know, interesting that you asked that, because probably 15, 20 years ago, there wasn't even a thought of that on a university campus, to have somebody that would just do marketing and be over the promotional side of what they do on a campus, or the sales, or, you know, whatever it might be, the branding aspects.
Right.
But it's absolutely changed. And, you know, now every university has somebody that's responsible for marketing its athletic program, and even in our case, even the individual teams, each team has somebody that does the marketing stuff for that team.
Really?
That's right. So
interesting. So what is the role of nostalgia in sports marketing?
Oh, that's a great question. That came out of nowhere. That was really good. There you go.
That came from the producer, Justin.
Justin, big time. There you go. Okay. Well, nostalgia is big, you know, because if you think about somebody like me, you know, I'm right down the fairway, so to speak, for Major League Baseball, because my age, I'm in the 40s, and I grew up playing baseball, and baseball really relies on the notion of nostalgia, because, you know, the game itself is built on the history and the stats and the things that people can argue about and remember and those types of things. And because of that, you know, that fits very, very well with somebody like me.
Right.
And nostalgia is actually what you would consider to be a psychographic attribute, something that you look at when you would assess whether or not somebody would follow this team versus that team, and or in the case that you're asking, this sport versus that sport. And nostalgia in Major League Baseball is huge. In some other sports, it's not the same notion if you just look at the history of the, you know, but the feeling that you get, and then you think about Field of Dreams, and why that particular movie resonates with a lot of people, is because, and it makes grown men cry when the scene comes on with the father son playing catch. You know, here's two guys who, you know, may not have had the best relationship, and that's part of the thesis of the movie, but when they play catch, that seems to resolve you know, a lot of that. And that's a nostalgic thing where you're bringing back up the play and the catch as a child type of thing and all that. But that works very well for baseball. Some other sports, it's not so much of a notion there. Obviously, at Texas A&M football, it's a huge deal.
Right.
And basketball, you could go anything at A&M really is a traditional historical thing. But
it seems like the NFL has been moving towards that.
They have been.
You talk about this, I'm thinking, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't see much of the nostalgia, but now more and more you see more of this nostalgic stuff with the NFL.
Right. They are. And I think they, you know, that every major league, you know, league is looking for ways to increase its fan base and to do that. And the notion of old school is kind of kind of a new thing. You know, it's funny to say that, but it's kind of a new thing. And the throwback jerseys are an example of that.
Right.
And they're trying to connect with those types of things, the history, the nostalgia, the feelings and all that. But to be really candid, they're also trying to find new revenue sources where, hey, you can buy this jersey, you know, as compared to the other jersey, the typical jerseys that we sell. You can now have this one and, you know, in this color and those types of things. So there's a reason for that. But at the same time, obviously, if it helps your fan base to increase, you're going to do that.
Right, right. I come a little bit from the world of stock car racing.
Good.
And, you know, there's sports marketing, you know, 101 there. And all the different paint schemes and the little die-cast cars they do. Any excuse they have to maybe sell something different.
Right. Right, and NASCAR actually is a tremendous example of really how to start out as a family brand, you know, and where the France family did it, how that was done as far as when they really started to try to market. They marketed for years, didn't know they were doing it, you know. It wasn't like they sat down and said, hey, let's do this as a family branded thing where the same segment comes all the time and we speak to and do the things that those people want. But it's interesting, all the research that's out there, you know, in sport and sport marketing in particular, it looks at NASCAR is amazing what they find, because those consumers, you know, by and large, really, really, number one, know that sponsorship and advertising and the marketing side is vitally important to their business, and they support that because they don't want NASCAR to struggle.
Right.
They want it to thrive and do well, and so much so to the point where even if they, which they have very high affinity and dislike both sides of the coin. For the different drivers, even if they don't identify with a driver and dislike that driver, and they know every sponsor that driver is involved with.
Right.
And what's funny about that is then they choose, you know, based on that. Well, I don't want to, you know, buy M&Ms because this guy drives the M&Ms car, you know.
Yeah.
So, and they do that, and it's amazing because they're very loyal.
Right.
And they're very much involved in sharing sort of the inheritance of NASCAR itself, and it's amazing. They've done a magnificent job, and their fan base is really part of it. They feel like they want to maintain it, and so they try to help. So they've done a great job.
Right. And it really comes back to the point of if there aren't fans, there are no sports.
That's correct.
Whether we're talking about football NASCAR, we're talking about anything.
That's correct.
Yeah. There aren't many people that will continue to go out and play every weekend if nobody's watching.
Right. That's right. That's correct.
So as you know, technology has really changed the world in the last 15 years. Has technology changed sports marketing?
Oh, monumentally. It's been an incredible change. In fact, you know, some of the things that we deal with, you know, most recently would be the Twitter issues and the obviously the social media stuff like Facebook. Those things have become new streams or new areas where people could seek revenue, which obviously weren't there before, but also the things we've talked about prior, and we could spend, you know, a lot of time on as far as developing the fan and speaking to the fan. Those have been have flourished through social media and other outlets such as that. There's also all kinds of different ways to speak to the consumer at events,
right?
You know, through technological advancements. And you can think about now on your phone, if you want to get up to the second scores, you can get that can be downloaded, obviously. And those things generally almost always come with, you know, some type of advertising that comes on your phone as well.
Right.
So, I mean, you can keep going forever on those types of things. But obviously there's been numerous technological advances that have really impacted our field too. So
has there been any kickback about some of the ads? Recently I've seen some football games where they will superimpose an ad over the field. during the play. And I know they tried that in NASCAR at one point where they would actually put ads up during the race on the track itself.
Right.
And you see it on TV. Of course, you don't see it if you're live there in person.
Correct.
I always thought that was kind of annoying, frankly.
Yeah, well, that's most ads. The research says most ads are annoying anyway, especially when it's in the middle of a game. But interestingly enough, those are called virtual ads. Mm. And the virtual advertising started out in soccer because the reason they put them in there was because soccer, as you know, doesn't stop. There's no stoppage in play, and you can't stop it for commercials because the game's been going on before the commercials.
Right.
And so because of that, they tried to figure out a way to put these on television. The only way to put them on television was to sell something and sell sponsorship and advertising. And so they did that, and through soccer, they started to do that. And then from there, it became the first down marker, which all these are technological. Mm-hmm. It became that, and then the virtual ads within there. And a lot of the virtual ads that are put in there now are in response to DVRs, TiVo, that advancement in technology, which has had another dramatic effect on what we do. But again, those are, in fact, I've done quite a bit of research on those and the effectiveness of them. But
How effective are they?
Well, it depends on where they're at. You know, interestingly enough, I did a study that found, and this was commissioned by a firm that actually does this. Mm-hmm. This is their whole thing, and it's called PVI out of New York City. But we looked at different locations. If it's near the scoreboard, because the consumer's used to that, because the fan is used to that, that's acceptable. Mm. If it's in the field of play, and we actually, you know, inserted an ad, Ford was the ad, but we put it right in the middle of the field, and it was like a toss sweep. The players went on top of the logo. They made the tackle on top of the logo, but that was the one they least identified or remembered.
Really?
Because what my hypothesis was, or my response to that was, well, they don't remember that because they're focused on the play.
Mm.
Now, if you look at the scoreboard, you're used to seeing signage there and, and so that type of thing. And I don't know that. We haven't followed up on that at this point. But the point is it's been done a lot and people look at it and it's sort of become accepted as well.
But it's interesting how people now have gotten used to the line of scrimmage and first down markers in football on TV. I mean, I find myself, if I go to a live game, going, where's the that's a TV deal, and that doesn't seem to be annoying, but the ads when they show up are, because it does take away, I guess.
Well, I think they're annoying. I don't think they're done as well as they should be. I don't think they're as creative, or, you know, I just don't think they look right. So
interesting how technology changes.
it is.
So we've recently gone through this economic downturn. Has that changed your field at all?
You know what? I don't think so.
Really?
And I say I don't think so. I think it did. I think we had a couple of times where there was a little bit of a blip, if you will, and one was after 9/11. So that's roughly a decade ago. And then obviously when the downturn basically started, I think there was a notion of, well, from the property side of, well, we don't really, you know, want to sell these. We're having a tough time selling the sponsorships or the ads to put the things on TV, the games on TV. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think sport has been, as far as the business side, certainly the marketing side, has been a bit immune.
Right.
I think there's been a maintenance. I mean, there's been dips, obviously, with both of those incidents that I described, or those events. But I think, in all honesty, I think it's been business as usual. And sport, I think, is one of those things. And if you go back to 9/11, you know, one of the things that people wanted to happen after 9/11 is for us to get back to playing football, so there would be a sense of normalcy.
Right.
And I think what everybody thinks is that, you know, sport is, you know, you can take a lot of things from me, but that's one that financially I'm going to maintain.
Right.
Now, I do think there has been, it has been utilized as a response for people not to renew tickets if they're dissatisfied in other areas.
Oh, okay.
To say, well, you know what, let's just take the Cowboys, who are obviously struggling right now. You know, number one, it's expensive as all get out for me to spend. If I bought family tickets, it would cost me an arm and a leg.
Right.
Well, now you're not very good and you don't perform on the field, and I just don't want to spend that money. So I think it does have an impact, but I think it's secondary at best. And I don't think it, as far as being an overall impact, I think it's been very minor. Yeah. Now, most people, you know, listening to the news and thinking things like that, that they might disagree, but I don't think the numbers bear that out.
Right.
And I think if you really look at it, it's a very healthy industry. It's been affected, but it's very healthy and it maintains, because I think sport is extremely important to people in this country, almost to a religious level. And so you can't, you know, there are certain things you can take from me, but don't mess with my church, my family, and and my sports, you know. And so then that's good for us, you know. It's good because we have a something that's going to maintain.
It's almost like people's escape.
It is, without question. It is. And, you know, you can say it's an escape, but it's also a lifestyle. And I think people, they may escape to it and enjoy it that way, but I think a lot of people just live it.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that respond, live, and die with A&M football, for instance. I mean, it just is a big deal.
Right.
You know.
I'm amazed at any of the big sporting events, the number of tailgaters that, you know, they'll take day, 2 days out of their life, and they'll go set up and cook in a parking lot and enjoy life there.
Yes.
And so.
Yeah, it must be nice.
Yeah. I'm glad they're enjoying it.
Right.
How does marketing, sports marketing in the U.S. compare to sports marketing in other parts of the world?
Well, we're the trendsetter. We're certainly the example for the rest of the world to follow. There's no question about that. And, you know, a lot of the practices that are done in other parts of the world are informed by what we do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of been a thing where it would benefit a lot of other places to look at how, you know, the practices in the United States are and then try to implement those in a, you know, a setting that fits for that particular area. And while I say that, you know, the case study of NFL Europe, which absolutely fell flat because they relied on marketing that we do here, which doesn't fit for there, which is a culture of football or, soccer.
Yeah.
And that culture of soccer, they don't really market it there because it's definitely a lifestyle there. They market it differently in how they do it. And things are just different in different parts of the world. And the economy effects, you know, the economic effects there are dramatic when you look at what they are comparative to us. But I think we are, you know, we do it very, very well, exceptionally well. We're the standard worldwide. But again, a lot of those places don't really, at this point in time, aren't really into whether or not they should market, which is really like it's just a wide open thing. If somebody wanted to take, you know, some of the practices and good strategies that we utilize here to different parts of the world, it might work very, very well.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So
it's interesting. Every time when I catch European soccer in particular, you know, they never have the name of the team on the jersey. They always have the name of a sponsor.
That's right.
You know, is there going to be a time here in the U.S. when we follow that model, and instead of having, you know, say the Dallas Cowboys jersey, they've got, you know, HP or Hewlett Packard or something
right.
on it.
Or another Dallas company, Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. I think absolutely. I think we're already moving in that direction. Whether or not, I mean, there are some things, again, because of tradition and the things that, you know, some of these sports are built on that would be sacrilegious to do, you know. But I think there's no doubt about that, because especially if it's a revenue stream. And, of course, the best example is NASCAR. They put a sign on anything that you could put it on, you know.
Right.
But some of the other sports, there's some things, but it will happen.
Yeah.
I don't see how it cannot.
Yeah.
And there are, you can look at most anecdotal stuff that's out there, you know, not necessarily the scholarship or research, but you can look at things in serials and different blogs, and it's clear people believe that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think it will too. Matter of time.
We've been talking a little bit about the effectiveness and what's good, what works, and what doesn't. And it comes back to a question that Justin had, and that is, how do you measure the effectiveness of the marketing?
Well, it depends on what construct you're looking at. If you want to look at, for instance, how do you know if the sponsorship is effective, which is a very interesting question, because there's a ton of money that's exchanged in marketing and sponsorships. And say, if you take, for instance, if we'll just use Dr. Pepper again, if Dr. Pepper were going to sponsor A&M Athletics, then if I were Dr. Pepper, I would want to know if that's a vital or a valuable thing for me to do.
Sure.
And so how do I know that? Well, you know that by several things. And usually the irony of this is that the industry side, Dr. Pepper usually wants to know, well, do they know I'm the sponsor? So that's what the construct is called, awareness. Well, just because they're aware to me as a consumer means very little. Because just because I know Dr. Pepper sponsors Texas A&M Athletics doesn't mean that I'm going to buy Dr. Pepper.
Right.
And, you know, again, we're a business-oriented deal, and what we're doing and our discipline looks at is we want the exchange process to take place. I want to sponsor Texas A&M Athletics because I want the people who identify strongly with Texas A&M Athletics to identify with me and therefore buy my
product
or consume it. And so there are a myriad of different things you can measure that look at, well, you know, what do you feel about the sponsor? Is there an image transfer? Do you take A&M Athletics? And because you identify with the things with A&M Athletics, just because Dr. Pepper has that relationship, do you then all of a sudden go, hey, I identify also with, you know, the same attributes with Dr. Pepper, and because of that, I'm going to consume Dr. Pepper. And again, if you go back to NASCAR, it's a prime example. A lot of those people who I would identify with Dale Earnhardt Jr., for example, would purchase the products that he endorses just because he, you know, endorses those. And probably the greatest example in the last 15, 20 years of how this is effective as far as sponsorships go is Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew is a you know, a sugar water that, you know, tastes a little different than Coca-Cola, but it's, you know, it's a citrusy drink and that type of thing.
You're making me thirsty.
Well, since we're on Dr. Pepper and Mountain Dew, right? But they have sponsored action sports events, which are skateboarding and different things like that. And they have done, their media has, their commercials, their internet stuff, all their stuff that they have done has been magnificently done. And because of that, if people think of skateboarding or snowboarding, they think of Mountain Dew.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is Mountain Dew has absolutely nothing to do with skateboarding. In fact, I mean, I don't even get what the connection would be, but there's such an identification with both of those together that they're congruently seen by the consumer as, you know, I'd say there's a lot of Mountain Dew that's been consumed because of its relationship with those different types of sports. And in fact, the drink itself is the fourth drink in market share. It goes Coke, Pepsi, Diet Coke, and Mountain Dew. And so simply because of that, you have to go, well, there's a connection between their, you know, thrust into sport and specifically those particular sports.
Right.
So that's a good, and then there's, you know, I'm using sponsorship. You could, there's whatever the type of marketing, PR, whatever it may be, the different facets, you could say, okay, this is how you measure that effectiveness. Now, the industry most of the time doesn't, you know, like I said, they want really sort of superficial or surface level things. Do they know I'm the sponsor?
Right.
And again, that doesn't, you know, that tells you only one thing. Yes, they know it. Now, there's a problem if they don't know it.
Right.
Because you spend all this money, you know, this to,
it's like the Super Bowl ads.
Right. Yeah. To activate this, but then they don't even know what you are or that you were the sponsor, so they can't connect.
Right.
So there's a problem there. But obviously, if you spend the money and they do know you're the sponsor, then you need to ask more questions to see if it's effective.
Yeah. So is it hard not to be cynical about sports when there's so much marketing that goes on? Are we getting away from sports and it's just becoming a marketing vehicle? Or
I don't think so. I think that question, you know, could be asked about anything because any product that is out there is marketed.
Well, I'm cynical about a lot of things.
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe you're coming at it from a cynical lens, but no. But no, I think sport has definitely in the last 15, you know, certainly last decade become, you know, entertainment.
Right.
It's
right.
Just like the Hollywood situation and so forth. The difference is it's real life.
Right.
And those games are not scripted unless it's wrestling. No, I hope nobody's angry about that, you guys listening.
Or High Lie.
But anyway, if it's, you know, some things are scripted, obviously, but if you go watch a football game on a Saturday, you know, that's one of the things that makes the sport marketing difference, because we don't know the outcome.
Right. Right.
You know, if I sell you a car, I know what the car is going to perform like.
Right, right.
You know, I don't have any idea what the football team is going to play like on Saturday. So I'm selling you something that's perishable, and I have no idea what the product's going to look like.
Uncertainty of the outcome.
Yeah, and so those things are different, and, you know, but again, I'm not cynical, and I don't, you know, I'm not even cynical towards cars, you know, even though I know there's a ton of marketing and selling that's going on in that too. So
yeah, well, we're running out of time here.
Oh, you're kidding me.
It's gone just so fast, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. you have any last words of wisdom, the take-home message for people?
Well, I think what they should think about when they think about sport marketing is really that in sport business, it's sort of the engine that drives the business. If you did, you know, because if you think about it, because it's become so much entertainment oriented and it's become such a deal where the stars, you know, are such a big deal for each of the leagues, the teams, you know, that type of thing, that it's become, you know, it's really a large percentage of its marketing. Mm-hmm. And if you've got to be effective in your marketing plans. And that's why if you go to even most businesses today, the largest, you know, groups in their business are the marketing groups, mm-hmm. because they realize that you have to be able to communicate with the consumer well, and you have to be able to sell the product in an appropriate, ethical, and so forth manner. So I think sport marketing is vitally important. It's extremely important to sport, the survival, the effectiveness of it, whether or not it flourishes. So
it's a part of it.
Yes.
You know, people may not understand it, have thought of it that way, but it's a part of modern-day sports.
Yes. Yeah. Very important.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming today.
You got it. Anything else you want to know about my kids, anything like that?
Not today, but maybe we'll have you back for another podcast.
Okay. Great.
And I'd like to thank all of you that are listening today, again, for taking the time and downloading us. Again, I would invite you to come to HuffEinsInstitute.tamu.edu/podcast and sign up for our podcast. You can download anything that's there, and even better, you can subscribe, and so automatically every Friday our new podcast drops into your MP3 player. Again, thanks, Justin, for keeping us straight here. And as we turn it over to John for the closing credits, we just ask you to remember to be active and be well.
We were talking just a few minutes ago about the role of nostalgia in sports marketing. From our discussion, what league has recently begun to use nostalgia in their advertising? Be the first to answer this correctly for a HuffEinz t-shirt.
Thanks for listening to the HuffEinz Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. HuffEinz family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffeinspodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the HuffEinz Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.